Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Thank you so much for joining me to another Ask Me Anything. Life support, ICU decisions, tracheostomy, ventilation, and intensive care at home. My name is Patrick Hotzel and I'm the host of the show. Before we go into today's questions and topics that have come in during the week, I usually go for about an hour. This is your opportunity to ask questions to me. You can type your questions into the chat pad or you can connect with me live here on the StreamYard link. I've just posted the StreamYard link into the chat pad. Just click on that link and you can talk to me directly. Whether you want that on or off camera doesn't make a difference to me. But this is your opportunity, or type your questions into the chat pad. Now, what makes me qualified to host a session like this, where I answer questions about life support, ICU decisions, tracheostomy, ventilation, intensive care at home? I'm a critical care nurse by background, having worked in critical care nursing for 25 years in three different countries, where I worked as a nurse manager for over 5 years in intensive care. And I've been consulting and advocating for families in intensive care here at intensivecarehotline.com since 2013. And I can very confidently say that we have saved many lives for our clients in intensive care. And I can also confidently say that you can verify all of that at our testimonial section at intensivecarehotline.com or on our intensivecarehotline.com podcast, where we have done client interviews. I'm also the founder and managing director of Intensive Care at Home. And you can find more information at intensivecareathome.com. With Intensive Care at Home, we're sending our critical care nurses into the home 24 hours a day, all around Australia. We're bringing hundreds of years of intensive care and critical care nursing experience combined into the community. No other service in Australia can match that. We're looking after the highest acuity clients in the community safely without having them go back to ICU. And we're improving quality of life and, in some instances, quality of end of life for our clients and their families. On top of that, we're cutting the cost of an ICU bed by around 50%. An ICU bed costs between $5,000 to $6,000 per bed day. We're cutting that cost in half. And we are also freeing up an ICU bed. And the ICU bed is the most sought after bed in a hospital. So it's a win-win situation for all stakeholders. And with Intensive Care at Home, we've been operating now since 2012. And again, you can look up testimonials on our website at intensivecareathome.com. You can look up case studies and so forth. Now, without further ado, let's look at some of the questions that have come in during the week. Now, if you have any questions relating to your loved one in ICU or anything related to intensive care at home, please type them into the chat pad or connect with me live here on the StreamYard. Also, if you like what I'm doing here, click the like button, subscribe to my YouTube channel for regular updates for families in intensive care and intensive care at home. Share the video with anyone that will benefit from the information that I'm sharing here. And leave your comments, what you want to see next, what content you want me to create. It's all user-driven here anyway. So let's look at the first question that has come in during the week from Andrea, who says, "Hi, Patrick. We had a meeting in ICU with the ICU team regarding my sister who's on a ventilator after a hypoxic brain injury. They did ask someone for a second opinion, and the second opinion came back concurring with the current ICU team. The ICU team are still recommending we extubate the breathing tube, also known as ETT tube or endotracheal tube, and let my sister manage by herself and letting her die. We, the family, have pushed back and said we need more time, at least 6 months, to see how we go and reassess further down the line. They are 100% sure she will never recover from this quote-unquote low conscious state, and that we should consider the quote-unquote best interest of my sister and remove the breathing tube. We have asked for the tracheostomy instead, just like you suggested, and said we need a long-term solution to keeping the airway open. Smart move there. The ICU doctor said they will not be treating infections with antibiotics going forward, as that is quote unquote not in the best interest of the patient, as we are just prolonging my sister's suffering. We discussed the DNR process. So DNR stands for do not resuscitate, also known as NFR, which stands for not for resuscitation, which basically means that a patient will not have CPR, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, in case of a cardiac arrest, in case of the heart stopping. They said they will not resuscitate her actively. If needed, they are effectively withdrawing care and treatment other than feeding, nursing, and monitoring. They will not stabilize blood pressure if it were to fail. We're strongly opposed to these measures, but the doctors in ICU are supposedly allowed to do what they think is, quote unquote, in the best interest of the patient. Families' opinions are considered, but not followed necessarily. The opinion of all the ICU team and second opinion is my sister will never recover to any degree of, quote unquote, meaningful life. She will remain in a, quote unquote, low conscious state for the remainder of her life. We have said we are opposed to these measures and we wish for her to continue with the ventilator and would like the breathing tube to be removed and replaced with the tracheostomy. That's a very smart move. We had two long meetings today and closed out the meetings with the doctor to take our wishes back to the hospital team to discuss next actions. I have asked the doctor to put any major changes, for example, the DNR directive, sealing of care, withdrawal of treatment, in an email, so we are clear what is happening when. Conversations in the meeting room can be hearsay, misinterpreted, misinformation, and easily retracted. We also said we will be seeking a third independent opinion when the medical records are released. Many other things were discussed, but that is a very short summary. I have attached today's screens. Can you please check if there's anything we should be concerned about? Well, without looking at the screens now, you should be concerned about a lot of things, you know. So here's what's happened in, you know, obviously this week with that client, and unfortunately it's a pattern we see far too often. ICU teams backed by a second opinion have recommended removing the breathing tube, also known as endotracheal tube or ET tube, from the patient who has been diagnosed with a quote-unquote low conscious state. They believe she will never regain what they call a quote unquote meaningful quality of life. Based on that assumption, no facts. They want to withdraw life sustaining treatments, including the ventilator, blood pressure support, and antibiotics. Well, the first question you need to ask here is where's the urgency to kill your sister? Where's the rush to kill someone? You know, can that be perceived as murder? Is that euthanasia? And I'll come to that in a little bit more detail down the line. But That's the first question you need to ask. Where's the rush to kill your family member? Why is there such a rush to kill someone? That is the first question you need to ask. Why are there no measures being taken to give your sister time or your family member? Now, the other thing that's important here is if you're not getting anywhere within the ICU, you need to escalate this to hospital executive. You might actually be surprised what's coming from there. And by that, I'm saying that, you know, hospital executive might actually be very responsive to you, and they might say, oh, we didn't know that was happening, not on our watch. And they might actually say to the ICU team, well, why are you doing what you're doing? You know, hospitals are big places, big operations, and hospital executive wouldn't have a clue what's happening with every single patient. So they might actually get on your side, right? So, you know, ICUs are very good at pretending they can do whatever they want until you challenge it. And that's what's happening in this situation because, you know, we are working with a client right now, and I can tell you the client is still alive because of our advocacy and how we're guiding the family, right? We're very confident in that, that we can guide families in situations like that to get results, right? So obviously they're now saying they won't resuscitate your sister if she has a cardiac arrest. They won't treat infections and they won't stabilize her if her blood pressure drops. In other words, they're moving to a palliative care approach and withdrawing active treatment, even though the family has made it very clear they want a tracheostomy as a long-term airway and want to keep her alive to give her the chance to improve. This is medical paternalism at its worst, where ICU teams believe their opinion is superior to families' wishes. And they're using quote-unquote best interest language to justify denying basic life-saving treatment, right? I can't tell you how many times I've heard over the years that, oh, we can take the burden of decision-making away from you, so we make the decision to kill your loved one so that you don't have to make that decision. Well, most families that I work with over the years are quite comfortable in making decisions. They don't need this paternalistic approach from ICU teams to say, oh, well, you know, it's us making the decision. We're going to kill your family member. Still not a good decision, right? I will say it until I'm blue in my face. You have to make a distinction here between a perceived and a real end-of-life situation, right? What's the difference? Well, I'm glad you've asked. A real end-of-life situation in intensive care is that death is imminent and nothing whatsoever, no fancy treatment, no surgery, no equipment, no medications, no nothing will save your loved one's life. Death is imminent and it can't be prevented. That's a real end-of-life situation. And then I'm all for moving things towards comfort care, making sure your loved one's not going to suffer. A perceived end-of-life situation is just that. It's a perception. And this is what our client's sister is in. She's in a perceived end-of-life situation. ICU is making assumptions about that the sister will never improve, she's going to die. It's just that it's a perception. So far, she's alive. So you then have to question the judgment of the medical team who's saying she's dying. And, she's alive. Oh, Halima, you're just saying, thank you, my sister now has a tracheostomy, but ICU wants to do a PEG. Wow, that is such good news. That is such good news, Halima. Where do we go from here? That's a good question. That is a good question. Ask them what's next after the pick. But you've done a great job there, Halima. Why? What's next after the pick? Ask them that. Let them paint the picture. No need to rush into a pick. And I tell you why there's no need to rush into a pick. Your sister can be with a nasogastric tube for months on end, right? I would want to find out from them what's next. right? And only then can we guide you what to do next. I do believe that a peg might be inevitable for your sister, but it's too early. Let them paint a picture for you. And let us also explain to you what a peg means. I would like to see from their end, why do they want a peg now? Like I said, given what I know about your sister, I do believe a peg will be the next step. But get some answers from them first. There's no rush. There's no rush. Because you know, she can have an acid-gastric tube for months on end. But if your sister needs a tracheostomy in the long run, then she will also need a PEG tube. But given that she only had a tracheostomy now, it's too early to rush into a PEG tube straight away. Let them paint the picture, what they want to do with that PEG tube. I hope that answers your question, Halima. So coming back to, you know, what I was going to say about, you know, denying basic life-saving treatment. If someone is alive, breathing, even with support, has vital signs, and you as the family want full treatment, you have every right to demand it. And if the ICU team says they won't treat infections or give antibiotics or not manage low blood pressure, they are effectively trying to hasten death. And hastening death is the definition of euthanasia. And euthanasia is illegal. It's a criminal act. It's a crime. And that's how you need to approach these situations with intensive care teams. And it doesn't really matter where you are, whether you're in Australia, whether you're in the UK, whether you're in the US, Canada. It's still that the definition for euthanasia is the same. And therefore, you need to approach it in that way. And we always advise families in intensive care in this situation to get everything in writing, including any DNR orders, treatment limitations, and the so-called, quote-unquote, sealing of care. Verbal meetings can be easily misinterpreted or manipulated later. Simply document everything. That's why I'm also so adamant that you get access to the medical records from day one. Right? Get access to the medical records from day one, right? And if they're making life hard for you to get access to the medical records, you immediately know that they are trying to hide something from you. You know, what's in the medical records you can't see? You know, what's in the medical records you can't see? Have you thought about that? If ICUs are delaying giving you access to the medical records, what is it they have to hide? Right? That's the first question you need to ask. Also, we do 100% support the idea of getting a third independent medical opinion, ideally from a neurologist not affiliated with the current hospital or ICU team. You want someone who will assess based on current function and potential, not assumptions or biases. We absolutely support that. The only caveat that I sort of have to point out here is that, you know, the medical and even nursing community is a very small community, so people know each other and they will try not to hurt each other. Just putting that out there. Now, let's talk about options moving forward. If a tracheostomy is done and, you know, a patient or in this situation, your sister stabilizes, you should immediately start exploring options for long-term ventilation or long-term tracheostomy care at home, especially if the hospital is wanting to withdraw treatment. That's when you should look at options such as intensive care at home. And you can find more information at intensivecareathome.com. Where 24/7 ICU nurses at home for long-term ventilation and tracheostomies are doing the work, where care is in line with evidence-based mechanical home ventilation guidelines, where it's also the ability for you to take your loved one out of the ICU safely and on your terms, and the ability to keep your loved one alive and give them time, because that's what it all is. It's about giving people time and an option to recover. You know, most families in intensive care are not delusional. And what I mean by that is they're well aware that the prognosis might be poor, but all they want is time and leave no stone unturned. You know, because ICU is not the only place for someone on a ventilator with a tracheostomy. With intensive care at home, we've helped many families to take their loved ones home, even when doctors said it wasn't possible or, quote unquote, not in the best interest of a patient. So, you know, so that's what's happening here. You know, a lot can be achieved just by you simply speaking up. You know, if you don't speak up when you have a loved one in intensive care, you are like 99.9% of families in intensive care who don't get what they want, who don't have peace of mind, who don't make informed decisions, who don't have control, no influence. And their loved ones don't get best care and treatment. You know, so we're constantly delivering on our promise. You know, constantly delivering on our promises here. You know, but you got to ask the question, and you have to never give up. Never, ever give up. And if doctors tell you they can make the decisions that they want, I call BS on that, right? I am not a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer. But it's still a step to kill someone without patient or family consent. That still takes, you know, some level of you know, deviousness even, you know. And you gotta do what is best for your family member. You know, not what's best for the ICU. So, got another email from another client here. Hi Patrick, today we were told that my sister will have to wait another week for a third neurology doctor's opinion to assess if she's eligible for a tracheostomy. That will mean she will have a tracheostomy, a breathing tube for 5 weeks by then. She twitches her eyes as if she's trying to communicate. The doctors are saying she's in a minimal conscious state with minimal gag reflexes, with some unconscious movements. Her arms move in a reflex manner. Head and eyes move now and again in an unconscious manner. My concern is the tube in the throat is very difficult on her throat. And she would be more comfortable with a tracheostomy and possibly improve much quicker. Absolutely. That is a definite. You know, a breathing tube should be for short-term measure, not for long-term measure. Right? Very simple. Short-term, not long-term. So, then the email continues. I don't know how to get the doctors to do what we're asking. What would you advise as next steps? Well, one of my next steps that I advise here is always to keep asking for what you want. Never be shy and don't give up. Right? A no often means a not yet. Right? And that's all it is. And that's how you have to view life in general. Right? A no means a not yet. So, it's a very frustrating situation that many families like yours are facing. You know, they're advocating and advocating and nothing happens, but then one day it does. You know, you can never give up. You can never give in to ICU teams, sometimes devious, you know, evil schemes. You know, and don't get me wrong, there's a lot of good things happening in ICU. You know, the families that come to this show and listen to this podcast, they are in a pickle. You know, they are unfortunately not the families where things go smoothly and, you know, where their loved ones recover easily. And, you know, unfortunately, the people that come to this podcast, you know, in those difficult situations. So if you're being told that you have to wait another week on top of already being ventilated with a breathing tube, which is also known as an endotracheal tube or ET, for 4 weeks, just to get a third neurology opinion before a tracheostomy can even be considered, because that would make it 5 weeks with a breathing tube in the patient's mouth and down her throat. Let's be very clear. This is outside of ICU best practice guidelines. Far outside of ICU best practice guidelines. ICU teams usually aim to do a tracheostomy after 10 to 14 days of being ventilated if a patient can't be weaned off the ventilator. Why? Because it's more comfortable for the patient. It allows for easier weaning off the ventilator. It reduces the risk of long-term damage to the vocal cords and upper airways. It facilitates mobility and rehab. And in many cases, it allows families to start thinking about, you know, intensive care at home. Well, this is, you know, this is the problem. The ICU team keeps talking about, you know, your sister will never recover. Right, instead of doing a tracheostomy and moving her towards mobility and rehabilitation and see what happens. You know, that can barely be done with a breathing tube because it's too risky most of the time to mobilize someone. Once it can be done, it is much more risky compared to a more stable airway, which is a tracheostomy. Now, in this case, you know, the patient is showing signs of a minimal conscious state. She's twitching her eyes like she's trying to communicate. She's got some head and eye movement, arm reflexes, and minimal gag reflex. These are all signs of neurological activity, yet the ICU team is still stalling, waiting on yet another neurology opinion. Here's what's really happening. Many ICUs use these delay tactics to avoid having to commit to a long-term patient. Once a tracheostomy is done, they know the next step might be a discharge to a long-term facility, or better yet, home, with 24/7 ICU level care, which is what we do at intensivecareathome.com. But they want to delay that as long as possible, especially if they think your sister won't recover fast enough in a timeline that's set by ICU teams, not by you. Always work on your timelines. Always use common sense. Always use common sense. If the ICU team is telling you that it's quote unquote in the best interest for your family member to die, you know you've stepped outside of common sense territory. Right? If ICU teams are delaying giving you access to the medical records, you know you've stepped outside of common sense territory. You know, always use common sense. Don't let any rhetoric from ICU teams dissuade you from using common sense. Never, ever. So, what can you do? Here are the next steps. Request the tracheostomy formally and in writing. Send an email or letter to the treating ICU consultant stating clearly that your sister has now been ventilated for almost 5 weeks, that it's not according to best ICU practice guidelines, and that you demand a tracheostomy performed immediately in line with evidence-based ICU practice. Send that to hospital executive as well. And never stop advocating. Next, ask for the clinical criteria and guidelines they are using. What are they basing the delay on? Ask them to cite the evidence that supports a 5-week delay in doing a tracheostomy. Spoiler alert, they won't have any. There won't be any justification. Mention transfer options. Let them know you're looking into transferring your family member out of ICU and into a more proactive hospital or home care setup. You have the right to do this. Bring up intensive care at home as an option. Once the tracheostomy is done, your sister may be eligible for 24/7 ICU level care at home. We provide this service service with critical care nurses trained in mechanical ventilation and tracheostomy care at home. And we follow the evidence-based mechanical home ventilation guidelines that you can find on our website at intensivecareathome.com, which hospitals often ignore when they discharge patients too early without the right setup. So you can find more information at intensivecareathome.com. Contact us there through the inquiry form or call us directly there. The delay is definitely not in your sister's best interest. The breathing tube is uncomfortable, and in 5 weeks is far too long. It's time to step up the advocacy, right? And that is exactly what we are doing with this client, you know. And once again, so far we've been successful in helping families from going from A to B. There's another patient or another client at the moment where we've had almost a similar situation, where ICU was adamant from day one that their 51-year-old father, husband, brother was in ICU dying with a hemorrhagic stroke. So basically a brain bleed. And what happened was ICU was basically telling the family he's going to die, and they were really trying to intimidate them, where they said, oh, today he's going to die, today's the day. And the family didn't really know what to make with that information, and they were hoping that the ICU team would do everything to save their loved one's life. And yet they were telling them that their loved one's going to die, he's going to die, today's the day. And you can imagine that those are scare tactics, and it comes back to almost bullying tactics, and it comes back to what I said earlier. Is your loved one in a real end-of-life situation or in a perceived end-of-life situation? Right? Big difference. Big difference. Think about that. Real or perceived. Huge difference. So, and then with this other client, you know, the same happened. You know, every day that the patient stayed alive, you then have to ask the clinical judgment of the ICU. Is it just scare tactics? Right? If he keeps surviving, is their clinical judgment accurate? Or is there a hidden agenda they want to pursue? Right? Same happened with this client. You know, the family brought me in as a consultant and advocate. And, you know, by cutting a long story short, the client also now has a tracheostomy and is off the ventilator. And yes, recovery is slow. But, you know, the same questions had to be asked. What's the rush? Where's the urgency to kill my family member? Why can't we do X, Y, and Z first? Right? Most situations in intensive care are perceived end-of-life situations. They're not real end-of-life situations. And the sooner you find out the difference, the better, right? You need to understand the difference between a real and a perceived end-of-life situation. And if you don't know which one it is, you know, that's when you need help, and that's where we can help you, you know, to understand the difference. But the bottom line is you need to find out the difference sooner than later. Because if you don't, you know, you might be at the ICU team's peril. You might be at their mercy. You don't want to be at anyone's mercy ever. So, you know, there have been so many situations we've turned around. You know, we have a long list of successes by helping families in intensive care what they want. Doesn't matter the rhetoric that ICU teams use, that, oh yeah, we can do whatever we want. That's just rhetoric. And like I said, I am not a lawyer. I cannot give you legal advice, but what I can give you is the absolute confidence that if you do ask for what you want, and every day your family member is actually surviving, chances that the judgment of the ICU team is wrong are very high. You know, 1 week in ICU 2 weeks in ICU, 4 weeks in ICU is often not a long time for some patients that are in really critical conditions. And the worst case scenario for ICU teams often is that an ICU patient stays for an indefinite period of time with an uncertain outcome. And that's the worst case scenario for ICUs. You know, most of you watching this would be in that situation. That's probably why you're here. You know, your family member is in limbo. You know, we can't sugarcoat that. But just because they're in limbo doesn't mean they're not going to survive. Now, 70 to 90% of intensive care patients survive. Depends a little bit on country, depends a little bit on hospitals, you know, hospital data, but the odds are in your family member's favor. Never forget that. Never, ever forget that the odds are in your family member's favor. That's how you should approach it. There's always, always, always plenty of time to talk about end of life. Plenty of time to talk about end of life. Where's the rush to talk about end of life? Where's the urgency to kill someone? Doctors and nurses are there to preserve lives. Sometimes you have to remind them of that. Right? And if your loved one is going to die, or you can see that over time, you know, your loved one is not improving, that's not what you want for them, there's plenty of time to talk about end of life. Plenty of time. You know. So, let's look at a question that is coming for intensive care at home this week. Let me read that out. If you have any questions in the meantime, type them in the chat pad, or connect with me live here on the StreamYard link. The StreamYard link is in the chat pad. Now, also, I want to welcome the viewers here that actually watched this on replay if I haven't done so. Also want to thank you if you're watching this on replay. Okay, got an email here from a potential client for intensive care at home who says, "Hi Patrick, my son is 24/7 ventilated. Just wanting to know, do you have support workers or are they nurses? We only have funding for support workers. Also, we already have a few support workers. If we move over, we just need to know how much you pay the workers, as I don't want them to have a pay cut. And can we move them over? Or are your support workers fully trained so I can leave my son alone with them? And do I get the interview and pick them as I feel my son needs certain support workers?" We are in a fight at the moment with NDIS to get 24/7 funding during the week, but we have 22 hours Monday to Tuesday, 19 hours Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and weekends. Saturday, 19 hours, and Sunday and public holiday, 16 hours. Do you have clinical nurses in Sydney that helps train the staff? From Amanda. So as you know, Amanda, with intensive care at home, we're providing tailor-made solutions for long-term ventilated adults and children with tracheostomies at home. And we provide quality of life for our clients and their families. And where we also provide peace of mind for families, because we're sending our critical care nurses into the home 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, obviously, what you're saying here, Amanda, is not uncommon. And it's common concern from a loving parent that you've shared. So let's unpack this. First and foremost, if your son is 24/7 ventilated with a tracheostomy, he's at risk of dying if he's left in the hands of support workers who are not qualified, trained, or experienced in managing mechanical ventilation and a tracheostomy. Unfortunately, it's not a game. It's life or death. I would actually recommend that you take your son back to hospital straight away if he has support workers only. It's not a game. It is very, very serious. The NDIS must fund 24-hour care with critical care nurses trained in ventilation and tracheostomy care, because the risk of accidental decannulation blocked tubes or ventilator malfunction requires immediate emergency intervention that only intensive care nurses can provide. Support workers are not trained for this, right? And they can't be trained for this. It's like flying the airplane with the cabin crew instead of the pilot. At intensive care at home, we exclusively employ critical care registered nurses who have a minimum of 2 years ICU experience. And they have extensive training in tracheostomy and ventilation care in line with the evidence-based mechanical home ventilation guidelines that you can find on our website at intensivecareathome.com. In those mechanical home ventilation guidelines, you will find, or in the evidence-based mechanical home ventilation guidelines, you will actually find that exclusively critical care nurses with a minimum of 2 years ICU experience are safe to look after invasive and non-invasive ventilation at home, plus minus tracheostomy. But even if your son would only have a tracheostomy and not being ventilated, he would also need 24-hour ICU nurses. And that's also part of the evidence-based mechanical home ventilation guidelines. Right? So, coming back to your questions. We do not use support workers to care for ventilated clients in the community, only ICU-trained nurses. We do operate in Sydney, in Australia, and have clinical nurse specialists, clinical nurse consultants, CCRNs, and educators on the ground who help train and supervise the nurses that would work with your son. And yes, absolutely, families are involved in the interview and selection process. We understand that the right fit for your son and for your family is everything. You don't need to risk your current workers losing their pay. We can talk to them, and if they're qualified nurses and meet our standards, they may be eligible to join our team. However, it would also concern me if any nurse worth their salt is working as a support worker. Right? That would also concern me. But keep in mind, what they're currently doing is they're flying the airplane and they're not a pilot. So the work they're doing is very risky and they don't even know that they're doing it. Next, we can work with you to help you fight for 24/7 NDIS funding for critically care trained nurses. And we can provide the clinical evidence that you need to justify it. If your son is ventilated and you don't have 24/7 ICU level nursing care, you're playing Russian roulette with your son's life. It is that serious. Well, the good news is we've helped many families just like yours to transition from unsafe home care models with support workers to safe, evidence-based 24/7 home intensive care nursing, all NDIS funded or with other funding bodies. Please do not wait until something goes wrong. Stop playing Russian roulette with your son's life. That's how serious it is. And to to add on to this, I know of at least 5 ventilated and tracheostomy adults and children that have died in the community in the last 5 to 8 years that didn't have the right level of funding. I can back up everything that I'm saying here. There's enough evidence that I'm having to back up everything that I'm saying here, right? So for you to believe that your probably very well-meaning and very nice support workers can protect your son's life is naive at best, right? Most clients that I'm referring to that have died in the community without ICU nurses 24/7 were looked after by support workers that simply could not manage medical emergencies that unfortunately do come up, right? So do not underestimate what I'm saying here, and not for 1 minute believe that the NDIS won't fund it. Do not believe that. If you do believe that, that's what you get, right? If you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, you can't. It's all in your head. So, let's look at other options and other questions that have come in during the week. If you have any questions, please type them in the chat pad or connect with me live on the StreamYard link here. You can click on the link that I posted in the chat pad. So another question that has come in more frequently lately is, how long does it take to wake up after a hemorrhagic stroke and a tracheostomy? The ventilation is weaned now. It's just tracheostomy, not waking up after a hemorrhagic stroke. Now what? So, how long does it take for a hemorrhagic stroke patient to wake up after a tracheostomy if they've already been weaned off the ventilator? So, first things first. There is no one-size-fits-all answer. The time it takes for a patient to wake up after a hemorrhagic stroke and tracheostomy depends on many factors. Number one, how severe was the stroke? Which area or areas of the brain are affected? Are there other comorbidities, i.e. infections, organ failure? How long were they ventilated and sedated before the tracheostomy? Are they on a feeding tube and getting proper nutrition? Are they in a quiet, healing environment or constantly poked and prodded in ICU? If your loved one has had a hemorrhagic stroke, has a tracheostomy and is now weaned off the ventilator, that's actually a very positive step forward. That means they're stable enough to breathe on their own, which is often a precondition for waking up and eventually recovering more fully. But again, waking up can still take days, weeks, or even months, depending on the level of brain injury. ICU teams might be pushing you for decisions like withdraw care, withdraw treatment, or sign a DNR, which we talked about in an earlier question. But this could be very premature. In fact, if your loved one is breathing by themselves but still has a tracheostomy, they may no longer need ICU. This is where we can help you with intensive care at home, where we provide 24/7 intensive care nursing at home, especially for tracheostomy and ventilated patients based on the evidence-based mechanical home ventilation guidelines. We bring the ICU to your home so your loved one can recover in a peaceful, family-centered environment without the stress, noise, and often craziness and rush that's happening in ICU. We've looked after many stroke patients with tracheostomies at home over the years who have slowly but surely regained more awareness, improved neurologically, and even weaned off the tracheostomy altogether in some cases. So if your loved one is in ICU now and is not waking up yet, do not lose hope. The brain can take time to heal, especially after a hemorrhagic stroke. If ICU is telling you there's nothing more that can be done, do not accept them as the final word. Often ICU is not the best place long-term for stroke recovery. We also highly recommend that as soon as your family member has a tracheostomy and is weaned off the ventilator, but even if they're still on the ventilator, to start mobilizing them, to start rehabilitation, to get moving, right? Especially if their Glasgow coma scale is low, especially if they're not waking up. How are you going to wake up if you're lying in bed for days and weeks and sometimes months on end? You need to get out of bed. You need to start physical therapy, physiotherapy, strengthening muscles, strengthening joints, movement. Right? So it's very important that you know what's coming next. It's a question that I had this week, you know, from a subscriber, from a client. You know, you need to know the next steps. You know, just like earlier when we had this question from Halima, you know, now the sister's got a tracheostomy. Hallelujah. That is such good news, right? But now, rehabilitation needs to happen, mobilization, physiotherapy, getting out of bed, you know, needs to happen every day. Only then can you find out what your family member is really capable of. You know, you have to leave no stone unturned, which is what most families are doing when they come to us. Do not leave any stones unturned here. You know, it's really important. You can go a lot further than you think you can. The other thing that I've learned in all these years working in critical care nursing, people or patients are very resilient. It's not like ICUs want to make you believe. They want to make you believe that, you know, they're going to die now. You know, people are very resilient. You know, we're all going to die one day, but the question is when, the question is how, and, you know, life is sacred. And we must preserve it at all cost. You know, and like I say, there's plenty of time to talk about end of life. Plenty of time. If things are not going in the right direction, which can happen too, of course. So, the other thing I want to quickly highlight here is that you know, that a patient died at home after discharge against medical advice without 24 hours ICU nurses, right? This also happened just in the last couple of weeks. Again, this is where I'm saying, where I have evidence that patients are dying at home if they don't have 24 hour critical care nurses, if they have a tracheostomy. And this wasn't actually a patient that was ventilated. She had a tracheostomy and she needed dialysis. She went home without 24-hour ICU nurses. The family thought they can deliver the care themselves with what I believe was a substandard care provider that didn't have ICU nurses, didn't have 24-hour nursing care, and she died, and I'm not surprised. She went home against medical advice, and we warned the family, but it's a real and it's a sad case, and it could have been avoided if only the right services were in place, if the family had been more patient about getting the right services in place. But I will also say that, you know, the family was in ICU with their family member for 2 years, and they only found out about us in the last few months. So, you know, the desperation was high, and I understand that. And it's very sad that this ended in a situation like that, because, you know, their family member was on a tracheostomy and then on a dialysis, and they make the decision to take their family member home against medical advice from ICU. Why? Because the ICU had also lost hope. They didn't want to keep the patient any longer, and the family was desperate to give their family member supposedly more quality life at home. But what went wrong is that the patient died at home. Like I said, not because the patient was too sick, not because the family didn't care, not at all. They cared very much. But because they didn't have the 24/7 ICU nursing care at home. Been warning about this at intensivecareathome.com for years. When someone has a tracheostomy, ventilation, and is on dialysis, they need to be cared for by 24/7 intensive care nurses, CCRNs, and RNs with ICU experience, in line with the evidence-based mechanical home ventilation guidelines that you can find at intensivecarehome.com. Exclusively critical care nurses with a minimum of 2 years critical care nursing experience, ideally with a postgraduate critical care nursing qualification, are safe to look after ventilation plus minus tracheostomies at home. Anything less than that is dangerous and negligent. It's as simple as that. The family thought in this situation they were doing the right thing by bringing their loved one home. They were hoping for comfort and dignity, but without the right team, turned into a disaster that ended in death. A death that was 100% preventable. The reality is that a patient with a tracheostomy and or on dialysis needs 24-hour ICU nurses. The risk of airway blockage, infection, respiratory distress, or other complications is simply too high. Without ICU nurses who can manage emergencies, tracheostomy changes, it's a ticking time bomb. Once again, at Intensive Care at Home, we follow the evidence-based mechanical home ventilation guidelines to the letter. We work with hospitals, doctors, families, and NDIS or funding bodies to ensure that a safe transition home is possible. And yes, many of our clients have survived and thrived at home with our team in place, even when ICU gave up on them. So let this be a warning and a wake-up call. If your loved one has a tracheostomy, with or without a ventilator, if they have a ventilator, with or without a tracheostomy, needs dialysis, and you're thinking about taking them home, do not do it without 24-hour intensive care nurses. Do not accept generic home care. Call us at intensivecareathome.com, where we exactly specialize on this type of high acuity care. We are the only organization in Australia that provides 24/7 intensive care nursing at home based on evidence on the mechanical ventilation and tracheostomy guidelines and standard. Don't let another preventable death happen. Right. Also want to quickly mention that we are currently having jobs for critical care nurses in Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, in Albury, Wodonga, in Bendigo, in Warragul, as well as now in Wielangta, which is country Victoria, which is not too far from Colac, Warrnambool, and the Great Ocean Road. So if you're a CCRN living down that way and you want to work with us, there's, we offer good rates in that area in particular. We offer good rates in other areas too, but, it's a remote area, so the salary is usually higher, but it also comes with some travel in, travel out, potentially some overnight stays. It's a 24-hour roster for a ventilated client in that community. And, the places where we advertise is also Ballarat, Colac, Warrnambool, Lawn on the Great Ocean Road, Geelong, of course, and also in Melbourne. So those are the places where we would, take staff in and train you on this client in that area. We would love to hear from you if you have worked in ICU for a minimum of 2 years. And ideally, you've done a postgraduate critical care nursing qualification, right? So with Intensive Care at Home, we're operating all around Australia and all major capital cities and all regional and rural areas. We're providing long-term ventilation, nursing at home, tracheostomy care, non-invasive ventilation, home TPN, home IV potassium, home IV magnesium, home IV antibiotics and home IV fluids, cough assist, Hickman's line, PICC line, central line, and port management at home, as well as palliative care. Now, I've got a last question here from Ulas, who says, GPS, AIDP, aroused of 1 month coma, opened eyes, some neck mouth movements, hypoxic, ischemic brain injury, and cardiac arrest before coma, tracheostomy picked on portable ventilator, now what to do further? Well, I would go, again, just what I've talked about, probably go home with intensive care at home, but I don't know where you are. Where is your location? Where are you located? And I do need to wrap this up in a couple of minutes. It's probably best if you contact me this email. I'll just type it into the chat pad. I'm running out of time here. I usually always go for about an hour, and I do need to wrap this up in a minute. Contact me at this email, support@intensivecarehome.com. Oh, you're in India. Okay. So if you're in India, send me an email to this email, and then I can I can connect you with someone in India. I can. And Lysandra says, what ways can I suggest my husband to get some type of physical therapy? What when he isn't able to move because of an anoxic brain injury, is only opening eyes, but not sure of visual. Again, Lysandra, I need to wrap this up now because I'm only going for an hour. I do unfortunately need to go now. I've been going for about an hour now. I can, I've got other things to go to, other clients to talk to. I do need to wrap this up now. I want to thank everyone for joining. I do these weekly YouTube lives every week around the same time here. Thank you for your support. Lisandra, send me another email. I know we've spoken already. Send me another email and or text, and then I can advise you further from there. Thanks, everyone. And check out intensivecarehotline.com and intensivecarehome.com. Take care, everyone.